Devin and Morgana have been celebrating midlife love by getting married 100 times in 100 countries. They believe grown-up love gets better and more fun, especially for women. Everyone's smarter, wiser. Men are more relationship-ready. And if they're not, it's obvious. Forget anything you were told about being too old or too late for love and adventure. Instead, get fresh new tips on dating, relating, and travel to exotic destinations. And best of all, call in for personal guidance, creating crazy, sexy midlife love in your life.
I always want to dance when I hear the music in the opening.
I actually always want to take a flamenco guitar lesson every time I hear that opening. So
where would we put it?
With the other guitars.
And the mandolin.
Right. And a banjo is en route. But this is a different show.
Okay.
But I'm happy to discuss guitars and mandolins.
You're going to have to start playing on the show if we're going to keep talking about music.
I don't know if that will happen, but...
Maybe. Okay.
We'll see. Things, you know, we have to, you know, leave space for discomfort in our lives amongst the crazy and the sexy.
Yeah. Well, you cope with guitars. I have discovered the glorious world of cute and comfortable shoes. And of course, we can never have enough cats.
Right. I suppose we could debate cats like we could debate guitars.
Yes. And so far, you have so many guitars, I'm in a really strong position.
I suppose. But they're all different and unique, I suppose, like the cats are.
That is so cheesy.
So this is
okay,
Devin.
So yes, this is Devin. My name is Morgana. We have been married, I think, what, 6.5 years now, and we've been married 25 times in 20 countries, working our way to 100 times in 100 countries, which is 100% Devin's idea.
It is, because I'm a romantic genius.
Yes, you are.
Yes, I figured that out.
And a year ago today, back in the before times, we were on a plane to Paris for a 30-day trip, September 23rd to, I think, October 23rd, traveling all over France, Belgium,
Spain,
and Portugal, which, boy, I'm missing. Especially Spain and Portugal. I had never been to Seville before. I'd never been to Portugal at all. And they're just calling to me. And it's just interesting that, yeah, it came up today. Anybody who is curious about our weddings and travel, especially because it was sort of a goof, and we've talked about it in other shows, but I just felt like a big fancy wedding was too much pressure for our little baby marriage. I was, you know, a spry young 47-year-old who had never been married before, and I didn't need any more pressure. I didn't need a guest list. I didn't need a banquet room and an expensive hotel. I really, really, really didn't want any of that. So we eloped, and then we started getting married in other countries, sort of as an accident. In fact, a month ago, we were talking about the wedding that started that in Puerto Vallarta, because our guest, Tamalee Tillerson of Tamalee Tips, married us on our second wedding. And that was the one that started this idea of getting married everywhere. But it's so much less pressure to just travel the world the way we would want to travel the world, and then have unexpected romantic marital adventures. So some have been really big and fancy, like the one in Manzanillo, Mexico, or the one in Lake Bled, Slovenia, getting married in a, I think, 700-year-old house by the Minister of Culture in Turkey. I mean, all of that was just a surprise. Devin's knighthood in San Marino. So some have been very fancy weddings. Some are just, hey, can you marry us? You stranger behind the desk, you look friendly. Can you just say some words about love and marry us? And that's been good too. And so last year, we had our trip and I shot a video every single day, all of which you can see at crazysexymidlifelove.com. You can see in a 3-minute really fun trailer, because Devin, my husband, was an editor for Miramax, so he kind of knows how to like cut fun videos. You can see that at Crazy Sexy Midlife Love, but also you can see our 30 days, the ups and the downs, and the weddings in Paris and Brussels and
Madrid.
Madrid, where that was surprising. In exchange for being quiet, while Devin and I were exchanging vows, what was the deal that these 12 year that like the this dozen college age kids could propose marriage to me? It
Yeah, no,
was
they wanted to pose for the they wanted to pose a picture, and we were in basically the Madrid equivalent to Central Park. And I can't remember
beautiful.
the name, but it's a charming park, and we were
With
sort of by these incredible structures right by the lake.
and this woman, Elizabeth Mudera, who we had never met before, but
Who's now our pal?
she's now our pal. She had followed my Rich Witch Challenge on Facebook, 5 days of wealthy living or something, practical magic for wealthy
You should probably
living.
describe that better.
Okay, sorry.
No, right now
Yeah,
you should
okay.
do that so people know what you're talking about.
Once every year or two, I do a 5-day challenge, drawing from some favorite exercises from my $15,000 retreat in Bali, which is honestly my number one millionaire's maker. And I took what I thought were just the easiest and highest impact exercises for people who don't know my work at all, what to do. And I put it together into a little 5-day easy peasy challenge with lots of feedback and game playing and contests on Facebook. And I call it my Rich Witch Challenge. And now I'm remembering the subtitle, Practical Magic for Wealthy Living. And it's easy, it's not heavy lifting. And people were just getting amazing results. Get jobs, raises, a new car, healing, confidence, because I'm always really focused on the inner relationship with yourself and raising your standards in life, just like what you say no to, what you invite in. And Elizabeth, I think, knew me from that. And so when we were coming to Spain, she's from Spain, so she came into town and showed us her favorite places and gave us an amazing wedding ceremony. Beautiful, just talking about the word love and breaking down the letters. And she's just a very smart, interesting woman, writing a book, has a background in physical therapy. She also teaches multiple languages, really brilliant, multi-talented woman who now we are blessed to hold as a friend, and we had this experience with, and we had one of our weddings there. Beautiful. Madrid is really one of the most gorgeous cities I've ever been to, and who knew? Like, you don't know until you get there. And these adorable children, want to do what they want to do, and she made a deal that they would be quiet. And then we would do whatever they wanted to do. So they asked for a photo where they're all on their knee pretending to propose, guys and girls. It was weird, which is what's so great about travel and meeting strangers. So that's the wedding piece, which is on my mind today because we haven't traveled anywhere this year. And so I'm really, really grateful that we got so much travel in last year. And if you want some vicarious travel, if you go to Crazy Sexy Midlife Love, we have a ton of videos that you can just come along for the ride.
Yeah, no, all of that sounds good. Yes, we have missed travel. I think most of Earth has been missing travel, just because even though there are many places that are sort of COVID safe, I think most places have their borders closed. And it's going to be probably like that for several more months, which is a shame. But I think it's probably a necessary thing for most people. And I think it's, you know, sooner than later, we'll all get the opportunity to start traveling again.
Well, and when I feel stressed, I start fantasizing about living in other countries. So I've been looking at apartments in Lisbon this afternoon, but we can't even go to Lisbon right now because of the policies for now. Not permanent, but...
Well, Lisbon's a great city.
It is a
great
question.
City. It's a great city. It was beautiful. I also liked, what was that, Pala? What was that other city we went
Porto.
To?
Porto.
Yeah,
amazing too.
Yeah, that's a charming, charming city, smaller and really quite incredible.
Beautiful and amazing food everywhere. And close to the rest of Europe, which is, you know, one of the appealing things. And just so much history, so much beauty, amazing bookstores. Unfortunately, mostly books in Portuguese, but occasionally something we can read too.
No, I mean, actually, when you think about it, for me anyway,
I found you some great books.
I'm a total book nerd, as my lovely wife knows. But in Portugal, in part because they have such a, Spanish is 800 million speakers around the world. So it has an extensive history of writing and just loads of authors, past and present, to line bookstore
But Portuguese
walls.
Is not Spanish.
Portuguese, well, that's my point. Portuguese has, outside of Brazil, there's not a lot of speakers. In other words, Portugal has, several million people in the entire country, which means, and this was actually surprising to me, is that it's much harder to find an English speaker in Spain than it is in Portugal. Everybody speaks English in Portugal. And I think that's kind of important to know. It's part of one of the reasons why so many expats have gone to move into Portugal, because the Portuguese there just speak English. If you go into any bookstore, they have actually really large English book sections, in part because there's just a limited amount. You know, there's far less direct translation into Spanish, as an example, than what happens in Portuguese. And so it's that thing where, you go into, when I remember going into a bookstore in Barcelona, and there were very few. There was like one little tiny shelf in any bookstore I went into that had English. Mm-hmm. I mean, the good news is I was primarily looking for books in Spanish at that time. And I found Fight Club in Spanish, which it gives me a little thrill. But in Portugal, it's just not the same way. So if you want that great book, you kind of have to read it in English.
But Portugal is a book lover's country. The most beautiful bookstore that we've ever seen, and it was the basis for J.K. Rowling's vision of Hogwarts, is a bookstore that was right by our Airbnb in Porto, with the crazy, twisty, dippy, different direction staircases. And it was just beautiful.
Yeah, no, they have one of the most interesting business models, and I can't remember the name of the bookstore for my life.
Well, we had to like buy admission to get into the bookstore and then stand in line to get into the bookstore, and then our admission could be applied towards a book once we were inside.
Which was certainly more expensive than the voucher that you were required to buy.
Could wait for hours. The crowds were crazy to get into this bookstore.
Well, it is. It's one of the more interesting, remarkable bookstores you're ever going to see. And they had Harry Potter, which I was also looking for in Spanish, but they had it in like 10 different languages. They had the room that was just sort of the magical room.
The Harry Potter room with the hanging candles and
all
books.
Of that. And so it's just an incredibly unique, interesting, very Hogwartsian. I don't know if that's a real word or not, but I'm going to throw it out there. Hogwartsian bookstore, and really charming. And the whole vibe of Portugal is just is sort of very unique. And for me personally, I up to that point had, I think, visited every Western European country except for maybe Malta. So all than that, so I had, for some reason, I'd been to Spain before, but never made it into Portugal. So this was kind of really fun to see its kind of dichotomy, especially coming directly out of Spain for our trip.
And Lisbon has a lot of magic. And that was a surprise because I'd never been to Portugal or Lisbon, but we were going to be there and I'd heard it was great. Physically, Lisbon, I like to describe it, if Jane Austen and San Francisco had a love child, it would be Lisbon, because it's hilly like San Francisco, but it's all that beautiful 19th century romantic Jane Austen era architecture, you know, with the tall white empire style buildings, although they're not so much white as they're covered with beautiful tiles. And something that was really surprising is there's a place, a palace in Sintra, that has this magical tower and so much symbolism. And I think they even did that second Maleficent movie. It was so weird. I'm watching Maleficent 2, and I know I've recognized the tower because we had just been there a few months earlier. Very with the four directions at the bottom, and it's like you're going deeper and deeper and deeper into like your consciousness as you go down this tower. Really just beautiful, magical, kind of fairy tale palace, a couple of hours or maybe 45-minute train ride out of the city of Lisbon, just
was
one train.
Was that Sintra?
Sintra.
Right, absolutely. And the tower that you were referring to goes down specifically 72 feet. And for those who have studied the Western mysteries or practical occultism, the number 72 has some very significant representation to it.
Such as?
Such as that there are three fabled lines there that come from, my wife is going to be sneezing. And
sorry about that.
No, that's quite all right. So there are three lines that come from the Bible, specifically from Exodus. And they're the three lines basically where Moses parts the Red Sea. Each sentence has 72 letters in it. And basically, if you were to take each letter, connect it with the last letter of the second line and the first line of the first letter of the first line, you basically, if you kind of go back and forth through each line, you create something called the 72 names of God, or the Shem HaMorephash. I never pronounce it correctly, but it basically means the 72 names of God. So there's a total of 216 letters, but there are 72 three-letter names. There's also some other things that happen to show up with the number 72 as well as 36, and I'm not going to bore everybody over that. But really what I'm trying to allude to is this particular town in Sintra this particular castle was really created with a lot of very specific occult detail in mind when it was created. And so this particular tower that really, it's kind of a reverse tower. You're going down, you're burrowing down into
the
earth.
Into the dark, yeah.
Right, and so it was kind of a takeoff to some degree on some of the Golden Dawn practices in the late 1800s. And that 72 feet down was kind of an important interplay in that, in sort of the darkness of initiation. Anyway,
well,
it was
a remarkable
thing.
And then when you're down there, you go through these caves.
Right,
they're like a labyrinth, and you don't know where you're going to come out. And as I'm sure, especially at night, when it can be really spooky and perfectly ideal for, you know, mysterious religious rituals.
Right, and so, but it was that.
And you were dying to lead one there. I could see it.
Yeah,
I
was totally down. I was totally like, okay, let's bring it on. Sadly, that's not really an option there, but it was really, it's a beautiful place. It has a nice wedding chapel. I actually would have liked to have gotten married in there, but that was all locked up the day that we were visited. visiting. And they just had lots of interesting statues representing the different Greek gods there. There were a whole bunch of fun, interesting, a lot of thought went into it. And I think that's kind of the part that I really appreciated.
Well, the whole area had a lot of surprising occult associations that we didn't know about it. And by the way, one of the reasons I'm bringing this up is when I was going through 30 different ideas about what are we going to talk about today, and we're covering one of them because, you know, I have as many ideas as I have moods. And then I send out tweets making promises. So I'm going to try and like cover all the topics. But one of them was, if you think that I'm magical and witchy, you should meet my husband. So you're meeting my husband.
Oh, right. Okay.
So I have circuitously, without any planning of how it was going to happen, just kind of leading us into this topic. The bookstores, the used bookstores in Lisbon had amazing esoteric, magical books, including...
That seemed to be an entire Portugal thing. That seemed to be just sort of their whole vibe, is that they were very open to it. And which is interesting from the standpoint is that I saw a lot of things that were translated into Portuguese that you wouldn't see translated into Spanish. Again, a lot of occult writings, tarot stuff, astrological things like that. And that just seems to be kind of part and parcel of their vibe as a whole. And I don't know enough of their history to know why that is, but... it is.
I did study a lot of the history while I was there to catch up, and they really had a vibrant history of African cultures and Jewish cultures and learnings, and then the Inquisition hit, and the blacks and the Jews were carted off, enslaved, or executed. And I think that the country is consciously, from what I heard, is really. Has been opening up and saying, come back. And it does seem to be a great place of learning and thought and exchange of ideas. And then their poet, Fernando Pessoa.
Right.
Major, major culty, multiple personality disorder, who writes from each of these personalities. And he even has his weird interaction with Aleister Crowley, who founded Golden Dawn. That was another surprise.
Well, yeah, what you just said isn't quite true, but please tell the rest of your story. I will correct you later,
Well, he has his alters. He speaks as all these different characters with their own histories, their own astrology, their own points of view. They disagree with each other. One, he had a girlfriend, another alter, like, sabotage that. It sounds like he had multiple personalities, and was at the same time a genius poet.
Yes, I'm not entirely sure to go with what you were just discussing. But yeah, I have no idea if he had multiple personality disorder, but I did read the Book of Disquiet. I have two versions of it. That is sort of the, like if you were to go into a bookstore in Portugal, Fernando Pessoa is going to be in the window. Like represented somehow, even the bookstore we went into that was in Porto, that sort of like the J.K. Rowling's Hogwarts bookstore, that even had a book in there by him. And so that's just kind of part of the overall vibe. He was this writer that was, for those who don't know, Aleister Crowley was a 19th and 20th century occultist. I think he may have been lost to the history of the world if it wasn't for the cover of the Sgt. Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band, because
really?
He is on the cover of that.
I didn't know that.
As one of the sort of like, one of the 50 celebrants that are on that Beatles album. And so he had this huge resurgence, certainly, probably in the 40s, but then again in the 60s briefly. And then he kind of has hung around. He had this huge volume of writing. But more importantly, he was probably one of Great Britain's greatest crazy people. And I say that with great love. He was a proponent of something called thelema, which is an idea that each one of us has their own unique and very specific will to act out. And it's our job to find out what our specific purpose is, for lack of a better word, to go out into the world and do that thing. And then when we do that, we can ultimately live in a measure of peace and harmony. Of course, this is all easier said than done. And so Aleister Crowley was at the time a very prolific author and writing about things like astrology and tarot at the time. And this was sort of in the early 1900s. And Fernando Pessoa basically wrote Crowley and said, "You made a mistake." And which was for Crowley, who was probably one of the greatest narcissists of all time, but very exceptionally smart guy. Like, we can verify that. Very, very smart guy. And so long story short, Fernando Pessoa and Aleister Crowley developed a correspondence together and became friends. Probably the biggest deal was that there was a point where Aleister Crowley faked his own death.
Who among us hasn't done that?
Right. Well, but he did that. He did that. And I mean, it's a very, very convoluted story. And he basically used Fernando Pessoa as sort of the guy who it's so bizarre.
Pretended to witness the death.
Well, he pretended to not witness the death. But he also pretended to be the investigating officer and would post these letters about this sort of like, you know, these very convoluted letters. I mean, there was really tons and tons of them.
This was in lieu of breaking up with a girlfriend or wife.
Well, no.
Right?
That was staged as well.
Okay.
Yeah, all of this was, I mean, it was this kind of absurd hoax when Crowley and his wife at the time, or girlfriend, were actually just in Germany, you know, probably drinking Weizenbier or something like that. And Fernando Pessoa just kept writing these articles about, you know, we're doing this search. We're doing the search. We don't know where the body is. We can't find the body. But we hear these sort of like ruse-like bits of evidence. And he kept referring to
them. The rumor was that Crowley had thrown himself off the cliff at a place called Devil's Mouth or something.
Right, the Devil's Mouth, right?
Right.
The Inferno something.
Yeah.
And it was it's a really absurd and ridiculous.
It's not a model of healthy relationship. If you're having a fight with your girlfriend, you fake your death so she'll feel bad.
If you are one of the world's greatest narcissists, this may be precisely what you need to do. And so Pessoa, whether or not he had...
Really putting the crazy into crazy sex and midlife love.
Absolutely. Well, but here's the thing about Crowley. I like him. I don't think I could have ever been friends with him. I think he was probably too much for me. I think this was a guy that went after life. He explored ideas. He explored who he was with absolute abandon. And he was just this kind of, you know, probably at the time, certainly. I mean, as you're talking about kind of a very Victorian sort of sensibility coming, you know, from, he was an aristocrat, really. And so he kind of just went after life with this wild abandon. Boy, I was not expecting for us to discuss this today, but, you know, that's what we're doing. So he was this really unusual personality in the history of the world. And he did it through his writing. And he was really, at the time, he was one of the greatest mountain climbers in the world for a period of time. He explored yoga. He explored astrology. I mean, there wasn't he dived into the Enochian systems of magic and Guaisha and a whole bunch of other kind of quasi-forbidden.
He just sounds like a character in a Wes Anderson movie.
He kind of is. As a matter of fact, there's a book called The Magician by Somerset Maugham that is based on Crowley. And then, of course, Crowley appears numerous times in the writings of Robert Anton Wilson, who wrote the Illuminatus trilogy and wrote numerous books that all sort of defy logic. He's the guy that if you want to dive into conspiracy theory and sort of the counterculture of the 1970s, 80s, late 60s, Robert Anton Wilson, who was friends with Timothy Leary, is absolutely your guy. And so
he's also the demon in that Terry Pratchett, Neil Gaiman series about the book that was turned
Good Omens?
Was turned into the series.
Yeah, so Crowley's one of those guys that if you want to make somebody like the devil and evil, Crowley was the guy you could do that with. And part of the reason why you could do that with him is he was a very open bisexual. Again, this is, you know, in 1909, very open bisexual. And if you were to say, what are you, you know, you're a bisexual, which was, would, you know, verboten, you know, 110 years ago, he would say, absolutely. He was just one of those guys that was just, he would put himself out there in ways that was totally against the social norms at the time. And certainly from his own aristocracy, it was like, again, absolutely strange and different and weird. And he wrote about everything and explored everything and just didn't care. And so when somebody said, oh, well, you love Satan, he would say, oh, yeah, no problem. Yeah, absolutely. But he wasn't, in terms of ideology, he wasn't a Satanist.
He just liked to mess with people.
Yeah, he was happy to mess with you. He was happy to mess with you. And he also, I think perhaps one of his greatest failings is, I think he believed you got it. Like, you got the joke. Like, oh, come on, we're being absurd here. And he, and but those around him and just society at large, like when he was a socialite in many ways. So when he disappeared, it was actually news. And so, of course, he had Pessoa keep sort of like fueling the fire. But we found the note. We found the note. And he was at this place where people throw themselves off the cliff. And all of these kind of, you know, mysterious little artifacts that were found along the way. So it was an entertaining yet nutty relationship. So, and that's part of the story of Portugal.
So how we tie this back into the larger topic of the show, Crazy Sexy Midlife Love, as you can tell, I enjoy Devin's fascination with this stuff. It's actually part of what made him write for me, because I studied religion in college. It's what I got my degree in. I had a special focus on mysticism. So none of what Devin is saying scares me. And I would guess that this is not every woman's flavor. In fact, I think a lot of women would go screaming into the night if Devin started talking about Aleister Crowley on a first date.
Oh, see, you know, that's, I always find that interesting. And I understand that sort of the reputation of people sort of leak out into the world. And then you get some idea that here's this scary, evil person. And then, of course, when you actually read his writings, you could certainly say that he was a product of his culture at the times, but he wasn't, you know, he was never put in jail for doing anything.
Well, he was also an aristocrat, so would he?
Well, the thing is, you know, he wasn't a murderer. He wasn't an evil person, and he didn't need to be. There wasn't anything about him. So I don't see him as being a spooky thing. I just read some of his writings and I go, well, he was a knucklehead, or this is an interesting idea to consider.
But the point is that the thing that would make you repulsive to one person makes you more attractive for the person who is your right fit.
Well, yes, that is without question.
I've been thinking a lot about that lately. I have discovered, as Devin is collecting guitars, I have discovered the world of comfortable shoes. I'm at an age where all those cute high heels that I was able to run around in for decades, I just can't do it. And then I found heels that I can actually wear, and now I'm a junkie and buying way too many of those. And relationship is sort of like that. Like, we have this idea of oh, this is our picture of what the relationship is supposed to be like, or he's the picture of the person that I wanted for myself, and yet it hurts because it isn't a good fit. And when you really choose the right person, there is such like a padding of comfort, so that even when we hit the stuff that makes me really uncomfortable, and when I get uncomfortable, I want to flee. I just want to burn the house down, meaning the relationship, and run away. But Devin makes it safe to stay, so that those bumps are not frequent. They don't characterize our relationship because we are a good fit. You know, our puzzle pieces fit. And for, you know, so many years when I was looking for my person, because I didn't meet Devin until I was 45, I would ask every really long-term, happily married couple what the secret was. And they all said that they picked the right person. And there are, and I know we've talked about this before, but there are just so many books telling people to settle for less than what you really want. And I'm not saying, oh, he has to be a billionaire and can't be anything else but that, because I think that's just absurd. But the things that really are necessary to your happiness, I think you have to be honest about that. And we'll just keep bringing that up. It's like, last week we had Rebecca, the roller derby queen who brought, you know, roller derby back to LA. She found a person who was not going to crimp her style because she couldn't be with somebody who was going to try and crimp her style.
Yeah, no, she would not allow that. That wasn't going to happen.
And Tamalee before her, they had a relationship where, very, very different, I think, from the way she was raised, where she and her husband are equal partners and madly, madly in love. And I really think that that's a key to a happy relationship, is you have to find what works for you. It doesn't need to look like what other people think it needs to look like, especially this year. People are so disappointed about large weddings being canceled. I think starting small and just focusing on each other is such a great way to get started. And you can always, always have your big wedding later. And it'll mean more because you have more experience of being married that makes your vows have a just mean more when you say your vows again. If you have any comments about anything we've been talking about or anything you're going on with relationship, you can always call in. We're here until 6. The number, our phone line is 888-627-6008. And I get that, you know, Devin and I go off on a tangent and you may not want to interrupt. Go ahead. Go ahead. If you have anything going on relationship-wise, questions, conflicts, comments, we'd love to have you join the conversation.
And, you know, actually, something just occurred to me. I just realized that the first time I thought about getting married around the world came long before you. It's just an odd realization. And it had to do with my first wife. So I'm going to tell you the story. I don't think I've ever told anybody this story.
I have not heard this.
Ever. So when we were getting married, my first wife absolutely wanted the big wedding. And we had a big wedding and it was lovely. And we got this bomb funk band who came out. They were unbelievable. And there was a lot of good food. It was a big fancy restaurant. And it was all of those things. And I don't remember it, to be quite honest with you, because mostly you're going from table to table thanking the people that you love who showed up for you, right? And so it was all about that. But before the wedding ever took place, I remember us talking in the kitchen And she was just like, I want this big wedding. And I'm like, I don't. I think it's a terrible waste of money. I think it's really expensive. And but it's what she wanted. And you know, obviously looking back, I don't blame her. She wants what she wants and she should have it. And she's a great egg. And so it was a fantastic party. But I remember then she said, and one of the debate points was, but you have all of these friends on the East Coast and they're going to spend, you know, a couple thousand dollars flying themselves and their families out for this wedding. And I think that's a great idea. And it's wonderful that they do this on a special day. Why don't, instead of doing that, instead of having this big giant wedding, why don't we have a little tiny wedding here? And then we'll fly to the East Coast and we'll have another wedding, or maybe a whole bunch of them.
Oh, we have a caller. It looks like Foline. I'm not sure if that's the name. So we'll come back to Devin's gripping story about life with his wife before me.
Oh, yeah. Okay, so is that wrong?
No,
is
not that wrong at all. No, I like your first wife. She is a lovely lady. And let's take Foline.
Oh, I'm interested in hearing that story, but I just want to say something. I loved it. You guys get married. It doesn't really matter. It's a year. It's not like an anniversary, like a re-up, you know, like your year's over, the anniversary, and you like decide to get married again. It's like whenever you feel like it, wherever you go, right?
Yeah.
When you guys do this.
Yeah. You know, it's like, oh my God, look, at the flights are really cheap here. Or any excuse. Somebody says, hey, we want you to speak in Mexico and we'll marry you. All right, let's get married. Any excuse to travel and celebrate love.
Maybe wedding yourself or something. Because actually, I had somebody who we actually said, we're going to marry each other spiritually. But I had done my own wedding, married myself first. There was somebody who officiated for Valentine's Day. So I decided I'm going to go. And this is before all the celebrities started marrying themselves. I forget what year this was. 1998. I don't think anybody did this. So when I did it, people thought that was a little crazy, but I think it's perfect the way I was supposed to marry myself first before I married.
So
I think that's genius.
I think it's genius too, but I have to
that
ask.
That is important that I, you know, be self-sufficient and everything is within me and not looking outside myself. So it took me a while to really get there fully. I declared it, but I wasn't fully there. Now I'm ready, but the person that I want to be with is not ready, willing, or able. Has been hurt too many times and doesn't want to get married ever again. I guess I'll have to move on and find the
nice to yourself. But I want to ask you how you got to that place where you wanted to marry yourself. Is that okay to ask?
Sure. Well, I did it on the labyrinth. I'm a healer, and I was doing ceremony on the labyrinth. I said, you know what? This is like a place that I should marry myself. It's like uniting my feminine, my masculine. And this year, everybody's talking about the divine feminine coming in. I don't know if you know that. So people thinking they need to have a partner. I said, no, you got to do that yourself. You got to find the feminine and masculine within. Some women are more masculine, so they need to find feminine. Some men are feminine, they need to find masculine. It's not like one person is exactly all females are one way. It's not. So when I did the labyrinth, that's what I got. I should marry myself on the labyrinth. That's the first time I did it. Then a few months later, I did it again, but I had an opportunity where an ordained minister did it. I'm an ordained order of Melchizedek, so I said to who I believe is my twin flame, I said to the universe, you want me to do work on this planet? You better send me I want to see my twin flame. And then that person showed up in my life. I knew him from before. But I was still legally married, so that didn't work out. But I knew that someday we would get back together when the time was right. And my husband passed away, but that was I had a contract. I didn't know this, but I had to stick in there until my son, you know, my son was having a baby when my husband was dying. It was like they crossed paths. The baby was born like a few days after my husband passed away. And I had to do everything by myself. And I never wanted to be in the middle of that, knowing my husband's going to die before me. He's older.
Yeah.
Didn't want to go through that.
Well, that sounds incredible. I have one more question, if it's not too personal. Can I ask you what your vows sounded like? In other words, was there a particular vow that you were making to yourself when you married yourself?
that I promised that I would come first, that I would never change myself to a man again. I gave up a lot of myself whenever I got involved with men. I had like 13 relationships. I was still married. But my husband knew I was like, he was my first man that I ever dated. So I had told him I need to date around, but I promised him I wouldn't sleep around, which I actually did. But, you know, I couldn't help it. I fell in love, and I'm always in love. My trust says that about me, that I love, be in love. I had affairs. But, you know, I suffered. He didn't. He said, you know what, you're going to suffer. These people are going to take advantage of you. He was right. And I told him in the end, please take that curse off of me. He goes, okay, I'll take it off.
Oh, that's beautiful.
Let me come
back.
Kind. But that wasn't the point. It's like I knew he had a chance to make up whatever he did in the past life. He didn't. And now that he's passed, he's come back and said to me, I was wrong. I should have taken advantage. He goes, he won't let me have another person. I'm like, you've got to let me, because this person is afraid to come in my life because he's been hurt by other people's ghosts. We didn't want him involved with a woman. He pushed him off the ladder. And he's like afraid my husband's going to do something to him. And I'm like, I'll make sure my husband okays it before I let you back in my life. And he said, okay. That's
Kevin,
what I'm waiting for. I'm waiting for him to say okay. But he keeps saying, you can be friends. You can't marry me.
Well, what do you moment. Say to that? That's I'm hearing a few things. You've said twin flame. And you've said that this man is cursed and can't fully give himself to you the way you want and need and deserve.
He has had something happen to him in the past where somebody he was just friends with, there was a ghost around her and pushed him off the ladder and he really messed up his back. And he's a healer like I am.
We've all had weird stuff. I was haunted by a ghost when I was a kid. My mom actually had to hire an exorcist. My husband exorcised his apartment with his last fiance.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So, Devin, you're kind of the expert on this stuff.
Give her
some magic.
On some magic?
Yeah, to share some of yours. I feel like I'm hogging up the whole show.
Because yeah. I'm ready to say, let this guy loose. But Devin,
I mean,
he thinks that he thinks that he'll get hurt from my husband. They were brothers in a past life, and we were betrothed. My husband and I were betrothed in that life, and he was the brother at that time.
Yeah.
And this
right.
is really fascinating because my girlfriend read the Akashic Records and told me all of this. And I said, you know, I don't know why I'm holding back. I don't want to let love this guy because I knew there was something. He was holding back. And I said, there's something going on here. And I didn't want to call
the holding back. The holding back could be a whole variety of things. I mean, perhaps the biggest thing is that the person's holding back because they may not be ready yet. Or
yeah,
the time,
that's the truth.
Because sometimes
that's
the timing just isn't quite right. But if there is, if you think that there is something, quite literally, I would probably just like talk
Date,
to the
right?
thing, talk to the entity and tell them to get lost.
Right.
Light
My husband, get lost. You had your chance. It's not your turn anymore. And I want this. So I really
right.
want to, I'm just going to tell him, you're not going to interfere no matter what.
Well,
it's up to me, how. But I have to also hope for that he wants.
Well, did you say that you weren't divorced?
You know? But he even said to me, he was in a relationship for 8 years, and he said he didn't love her as much as he loved me. And I was only in, I lived with him for 8 months, and he said, I loved you more. And I'm like,
right.
Well, that says a lot, you know?
I would tweak what Devin said. I think this guy, especially if your husband who passed away was his brother, this guy has to have a conversation with your dead husband and work it
right.
out for you. If he wants you in his life, he has to hero up and have
right.
that conversation.
I'm so glad I called
plain.
In. You gave great. You guys give great advice. I love it.
And,
I don't think I have all the answers, but I don't.
No, and be willing
in.
If he can't, be willing to let him go with love.
Right.
A year before I met Devin, I was crazy about a guy who didn't love me. And as soon as he said, I don't love you, which was a shock to me because I thought he was crazy about me too, I listened. Now, your guy loves you, but he's also saying, but I can never marry you, which is
a way. But he's actually said he's satisfied with being, because he can't have sex anymore. Something about his sex, he had back problems, and then he says,
yeah.
I can't have sex anymore. I'm like, I don't care about that. I can heal that. I said, if you really want to do that, we'll work it out. I said, that's not important to me either. If never have sex again.
I do believe that you believe what somebody tells you when they tell you that they can't give you what you need.
Right.
And if he cannot give you what you need,
that's different.
Then love him and release him and know that he will find a better match and you will get better. I met Devin after I let the other guy go because there's no room for what you want if that place is filled with somebody who will disappoint you.
I also want to throw in one little idea that may be useful to you, because you use the phrase twin flames. If you start going back...
exactly that. I think he's something else, but it sort of evolved into something more.
Give me one moment here. Is that there's this idea of a soulmate, and if you start going back into Kabbalistic tradition, you will find that the idea of a soulmate is not just a single person. It's not an individual. It's actually quite many people. So in all likelihood, the people you've been with during the course of your life would qualify as a soulmate. In other words, somebody that would help you walk through life and make corrections and learn and grow and at different stages of life. So that doesn't mean, in other words, if this twin flame were to go away, that doesn't mean, as a matter of fact, the high likelihood would be that you would find somebody who would be as suitable, if not more suitable for you.
The thing is, he has the same numbers, the same signs, and we experience life problems the same, paralleling. Even when we were separated, it was very odd. And
yes.
I had a healer work on my twin flame, and he told me something happened to him that nobody's ever been able to explain. I healed the spirit of my twin flame, but that doesn't mean all his stuff that he did on this planet was all healed. It was just his spirit that was healed. He told me that he had pink light coming out of his heart, and I said, well, that could be what my healer did for you. And I said, I don't know. I don't remember the date I did this. When did this happen? And he goes, well, all I know is my, everybody tells me I have this pink heart in the aura picture, and that's unusual. I've never seen that.
He could end
both
up
have
being
very
a very
powerful spirits.
Yeah. Well, it does sound like you have a real soul connection, like a really cool, magical, special soul connection.
That I do, and I've never found anybody like this. That's why I don't want to give it up.
Well, it doesn't necessarily mean that you will. Like, there are a few ways this could go. He could become a great friend. He can be a soulmate without being your life partner, because there are certain compatibility things that are necessary for a life partner. So I always say this or better, if you don't stay with this person. Again, I would give him the opportunity to hero up and work this out with his brother himself, because then he will own it. And it's really his issue, not yours.
Yeah, that's true. He doesn't think he has an issue. He thinks he's really fine. And I know he has an issue. He has an issue with his ex-wife on top of it all.
And you chose somebody with an issue, and that's your issue. And I say that, calling the kettle black, because that was how I stayed single.
True, I have it with my husband.
Was picking people with issues. What did you, Devin, you sounded like you had something more to say.
No, I think you guys are on the right track. I think part of it is freeing yourself up to allow the universe to enter your life however it will. So even though you have all of this, you have this list of all these things that somehow this guy is connected to you, don't be surprised or don't turn away if the universe provides you something else that has the same kind of magic attached. Do you know what I mean? Like, even though this is the first or only time that it's happened, doesn't mean that it won't happen again, because maybe it happened for that time because you needed to confront the issues that are surrounding the relationship that he represents to you. But that doesn't mean there isn't somebody else who has the same kind of connection that just hasn't arrived yet.
Yeah.
Right. Absolutely.
You sound like you were better for her, right? That's what it sounds like to me,
that you said
better that came along.
Right. I'm not saying that the person you're talking about right now isn't the right person.
We don't know.
We don't know. But what I am saying is it's quite conceivable that a new person can arrive that can deliver the same sort of magic and connection that may have been surprised you. So just allow yourself the prospect to be surprised.
Who may be more relationship ready. I also have a hunch that this person you're with, it's not your first go round with him. And you'll run into him in a future life too.
Unless you figure it
out. I hope not. I don't plan on coming back. This is the last mistake. Okay. I'm not doing it again.
So then you can just send us postcards.
Then that's it.
you can send us postcards from beyond.
Right.
And thank you.
My pleasure.
Love your show. And I'm listening after you, Hank. I want to hear his ex-wife story.
All right. We may have to save that for the next sleep, but thank you for calling in, Feline, and have a great day.
Bye.
So we're down to, I think, about a minute. So I don't know if I'm going to have time for the whole ex-wife story. Do we talk about the ex-wife story for next week?
Yeah, we'll have to save it for 2 weeks when we're on our own again. Lovely lady, you have excellent taste in women, if I may say so.
Well, yes. I mean, it's a process, for sure. It's a process. And I think we both learned, hopefully, a lot from each other. And, I mean, I think that's part of the gift of life. It's like, I suppose it would be easy to just hate each other, and I think a lot of people do that, but I just don't think it's worth it.
And by the way, that's part of why we're together, because I asked you about her on our first date, and you had nothing but kind, loving things to say about her without that feeling that you were still holding on.
No, she's great. She's great, and the good news is she's found a wonderful companion. They're in love. I think they're doing their own thing, and I want them to be happy.
Okay, so we didn't go into the politics that I was planning on covering, so fortunately, there will be awful politics going on in a couple of weeks.
I sigh with relief.
Yeah, I'm like really feeling it bad today. So go to Crazy Sexy Midlife Love, watch our videos, download Devin's ebook for free, Women Are Smarter Than Men and Other Secrets Marriage-Minded Women Need to Know.
Because they are smarter. I just need to articulate that.
And we will have another fun guest next week.
Oh, who is our guest next
week? I don't know.
Oh, well, okay.
I have to ask somebody.
Yeah,
but she will be, or he will be fun, I promise. And then it'll just be Devin and I together again, bickering about the big things.
Right, because by then my banjo would have arrived.
Oh, so we maybe get a serenade.
Well, that may be, you know, that may be pushing the envelope, but I may want to discuss it.
Okay, so have a happy, crazy midlife full of love, and we will see you again in a week.
Thank you for listening to Crazy Sexy Midlife Love. Please sign up to join our free love family at crazysexymidlifelove.com. To get alerts to live shows, call in and ask questions, or just listen in. And ladies, don't forget to download Devin's free ebook, Women Are Smarter Than Men and Other Secrets Marriage-Minded Women Need to Know. Also available at crazysexymidlifelove.com.